better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
You know when you go move out on your own for the first time, you move out of your parents' house, whether you get a new apartment, get a home, rent house, go to college for the first time, there's a little bit of excitement surrounding that. And we saw some of that same type of excitement from Arkansas football players and Arkansas basketball players that are freshmen that moved into their dormitories this weekend. And it wasn't just the excitement you saw from the players. It was the excitement that you saw from the parents as well, the coaching staff that was excited to get their guys on campus for these upcoming seasons. And I know you listening right now as Arkansas fans, you're excited about football, you're excited about basketball, you're always excited about baseball based on what Dave Van Horn has done over the years. But particularly in football and basketball, where you're excited for a couple of different reasons, you saw these guys move in over the weekend, and that only upped the ante a little bit. That didn't deter your excitement. That just upped it a little bit. And I think it's well-deserved, and I think it's warranted, and I think there's good things on the horizon for these programs. Now, I can't sit here and tell you, and I can't predict the future if it's going to come true. I'm just hoping, like many of you are, that there's good things in the future for these two programs. Were you excited to see these guys move in over the weekend?
Yes, for two reasons. A, it's, you know, the next group of recruits that you've been watching for. And I know there was a lot of focus on the basketball side, but there were also players coming from other sports. But it's also exciting just to see progress in the midst of all of this coronavirus and COVID and, mm-hmm. and to see that, hey, that didn't get delayed, because we've obviously got a lot of things being re-evaluated when it comes to, are we going to progress with reopening? I was glad to see that didn't get the brakes put on it, and that, you know, because we're seeing at other universities and just states in general, a lot of news over the weekend about, all right, we're going to go back and take a few steps backwards in our progress towards getting back to some sense of normalcy. So that was, to me, just a good sign of, all right, we're on the same path here and we haven't had to shut anything down.
And I know they're having to wear masks and they're having to do the social distancing and stuff, but as you mentioned, there's at least some form of positivity. Freshmen are still moving in on campus. Freshman athletes are still moving in, which I think is exciting for many of you Arkansas fans, because this has just been such an unknown. This has been a time that no one else has ever had to experience before, and so you're looking for some sense of normalcy. So when you do see guys get up there on campus, that makes you excited and think about these upcoming sports seasons, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, whichever one you enjoy more, which I know a lot of you listening enjoy them both, but we're closer to football, so we'll talk more football. Here's what some of the parents, here's what some of the players, here's what some of the coaches had to say about the excitement of moving in this weekend.
Today's move-in day. I'm Christy Rusicko. I'm JT Towers' mom. Meeting Coach Pittman and staff, we knew this was the place we needed to be.
Hey, I'm Adrienne Henderson, Marcus Henderson's mom, and we chose Arkansas because of the family feel. We met Pittman, and it was just like, you know, we knew that that's where Marcus needed to be, and just by his ability to be comfortable right away, and it's just a really great opportunity right now too to rebuild this program.
He wants to be a business student, but Walton School is great, so combining academics, being able to play in the SEC, it's the best of both worlds, and we know he's at the right place because he's with great people.
A day and a half with Coach Pittman sold me. I mean, he's very, very genuine. I need someone to fill the gap with me being 5 hours away. And Coach Pittman and his wife, I feel real good about it.
It's just all about being around really good, caring people and playing great football.
As you can tell, I'm a mom first, and I'm sending my big 6'5", 290-pound baby here to Arkansas.
And that was a great comment from Marcus Henderson's mom down the stretch. And we've talked often about Danielle Musselman's impact on the Arkansas basketball program, but Jamie Pittman is also going to have an impact on this football program. And you heard from the mothers that we've made the statement, hey, they're sending off their kid not only to Sam Pittman, but to Jamie Pittman and the rest of that staff. And especially in a time period like this, where there's a little more unknown out there with everything that's going on, you really have to trust the man in charge. You have to trust the staff in charge, the mom in charge, the first lady, if you will, of Arkansas football. And it seems like based on the comments you heard from the parents, based on what players, former players, current players, now players have said about Coach Pittman, there is a trust factor there, which is very important when you've seen other players come out. For case in example, UCLA and Chip Kelly, they're like, we need someone, a third party, to moderate what they're doing just to make sure we're safe. You haven't seen that come out of Arkansas because there is a trust factor there with Sam Pittman. So it's very important that that continues to be the case with this Arkansas football program.
You know, for these parents, it's a whole different set of emotions because, yes, they're 18, 19. You'll understand this someday when you become a parent and then 18 years later they move to college. And it's hard because, yeah, they're 6'5", as she was saying, but that's your baby. I mean, that's still your flesh and blood and someone you've poured your heart into from before they were born. And it's such a big moment when they move out of your home, out of your nest, somewhere else, and you know that they may never come back and live in my home, which is exciting on one hand, but very sad on the other, because I don't know many parents that don't take just total pride in their kids. So it's a tough moment. Both you're happy for your kid because of the opportunity. You're sad because it's a marked life change for everyone in your family.
It's the empty nest conversation. Well, initially, you're excited, and then all of a sudden, when it kind of a couple months go by, a couple weeks go by, and then you start to get sad a little bit because you're used to certain things being a certain way, and all of a sudden, those kids, they're not there anymore.
Well, the love of a child for a parent, it's just, it's hard to even put words around. It's a little different for everyone, but it's, there won't be anything that ever replaces how much you love your children. And it's, for some kids, they're ready. They're mature enough. They're emotionally sound enough to move away. Others are going to need a little more help and guidance when you're 5 hours from home. So, but I think it's probably easier in some ways, but harder in the others, that you can FaceTime now. You can, you know, you can keep up, which is good and bad, because you may not want to know everything your kids are doing 5 hours away at college.
Yeah, and football had 15 guys move into the freshman dorms. Basketball had 5. You say, well, have 5. You got to remember the walk-on. It's Bryson something. I'm forgetting that a kid out of Texas, that he's the walk-on there. So they had 5 guys move in for the Arkansas basketball program. But you mentioned the important part and the important aspect of just being close to your parents or whatever. Some kids are, some kids aren't. But you at least have the technology now where you can still keep in touch often and talk to them as much as humanly possible. Some parents won't want to talk to their kids every night. Other parents, it's once a week. Others, it's once a month. I'd say I talk to my dad and my stepmom probably once every week or two. And I'd say that's good for me, but I know for others it's different based on how they go about with their relationships.
Always a big moment on the walk of life there when you move off to college for the first time.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown!
Before we get into the Odom Bryles conversation, Danny in Russellville wants to go back to that Parkview-Russellville game where Corliss almost won it with the half-court heave at the end. Danny, go ahead, man. I wasn't around, but I bet you were.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I was at that game, and it was one of the best high school games I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I remember about it is Parkview, they were almost like a college team.
They were.
What I mean by that is, they were so good that I remember the first half, they played the Nolan Richardson press the whole game. And the Cyclones were exhausted at halftime, and they couldn't get the ball up the court. It just, their defense was stifling. And the second half, guess who brought the ball up the court? Corliss.
Corliss, yeah.
It was a fantastic game. Just a little tidbit. The Pinion kid at Marlton that Arkansas is recruiting, I'm pretty sure his dad was assistant coach on that team. So he knows what a Division I player looks like. And as far as the coaches, we better hope they're both good, guys, because I think we had some talent last year, and hopefully the improved coaching will come through this year, and we'll see. I don't even want to talk about last year's disaster, but I just want to see a better coach football team. Anyway, guys, you have a good day. Thank you.
Danny, appreciate your call as usual. So I wish I could have been around for that game. Oh. So I watched the King Con Classic, which mm-hmm. featured Jason Kidd and Corliss Williamson. I watched that where Corliss blocked Jason the buzzer. That's right. On YouTube somewhere. So I've watched that. I don't believe the game's whereabouts are on YouTube.
Probably
this one.
Not. I mean, it's on a VHS tape. I'd started as a sophomore in high school doing, got into this profession, was fortunate enough to worm my way in. And I was doing the high school games with a guy from a local TV station. Well, he had to go cover the Razorbacks in the NCAA tournament come high school state tournament time. So they just dumped it in my lap. I didn't, okay, off I went, you know, and I'd been helping doing color stats, doing whatever they let me do, and done a few games throughout the year. Two of the games I got to do. Russellville with Corliss Williamson came to Fort Smith Southside. The gym was absolutely packed. I mean, you could not get another soul in that gym.
Mm-hmm.
Southside was led by a guy named Barry Lunny Jr. May have heard of him. They beat Russellville that night by like 10. Go back and play the return game at Tucker Coliseum in the middle of the year, and Corliss's team is really good. Lunny misses a shot from the elbow left side that if it goes in, Southside wins the game. That place was packed that night, had over 5,000 there for a regular season high school game. Then it was up by a bigger crowd where they had the state tournament that year. Russellville wanted to host it because Corliss's team was great and they wanted as many people to be able to see him, but Parkview's team was even better. And that was a state semifinal, the game Danny was talking about that I mentioned earlier with Rip's team. They ended up playing Southside the next night in the state finals. They didn't play finals in Hot Springs then, and Parkview was the better team that year and won the state title, but it was probably the best high school basketball team Coach Ripley ever had or the state's ever had.
So Derek Fisher, you said, was the sixth best player on that team. Who?
Fifth guy, probably the fifth. I saw Steve Sullivan text. He had Deion Cross on that team. He had guys that went all over the country to play college, Division I college basketball. And Derek stayed at UALR, and UALR was not even on the same level in 30 years ago that they are today as far as you know, the quality of their basketball program. So he obviously ended up having the best career, I mean, without question, but there were some really good players. I think there was six players assigned to Division I scholarships, and all five pretty good offers with their starting five. That's a great collection of talent that Coach Rip had.
Well, that must have been a fun high school team to watch. Yep. Based on what you're talking about and based on what others have said about it. Mm-hmm. As well. Already got a couple texts in here about the conversation. If you want to hop in, 877-377-6963. What was the more important hire? Was it Barry Odom at the defensive side, or was it Ken O'Briles on the offensive side? Brandon texts in. He says, I think Barry Odom was the most important hire because of how poor the defense was. If you don't get the defense up to a competitive level, Arkansas should just join the Big 12. We mentioned this past week, Arkansas had the worst scoring defense in the Power 5, the fifth or sixth worst scoring defense in all of college football. So for Brandon to say what he said, he's exactly right. The defense was atrocious this past season. But it's not like the offense was much better. Now, it might have been a little better than that, but the offense at times last season looked like it had no business competing in the Southeastern Conference. But one of the things you're excited about is Barry Odom. He hasn't done it at a place like LSU or Alabama or so. He's made his money at a lesser school like Missouri, a lesser school like Memphis, a school where you have to develop kids rather than just coach them as is when they show up to campus, because he's not getting forward five stars every single time.
Agree with all of that. Let me go a little bit different direction of as why Barry Odom was the more important the hires, and that was because he had been a head coach before. He just recently came off being not just a head coach in the SEC at Missouri, and adding someone with that on their resume, that level of experience to Sam Pittman's staff, I think is important. You know, they kind of jokingly talk about the walks they take every day, and now they're starting to pass people, and the pace is so frantic they can't even talk. But I mean, the reality is Sam Pittman needed a sounding board, someone to lean on, someone's experience to draw from. Bryles can't offer that. He can offer the – he's seen it up close and personal with his dad. He's been around it, but you can't substitute the actual experience. And that's one thing Sam Pittman doesn't have is the actual experience at this level being a head coach. He's now got someone on his staff that's done it in this league, and I think that's what makes him the most important hire to me is the intangible that he brings to Sam Pittman.
Rick and Alma text in. He says Barry Odom brings great defensive and head coaching experience, just as you're talking about, Tommy. The head coaching part of this equation, I think, is big. And Kendall Bryles, while his father, Art, was a longtime head coach, not only at the high school ranks, but at Baylor, also at Houston as well, he had that in his back pocket, but he is yet to be a head coach, so he doesn't have that. On top of that, Barry Odom has done it in the Southeastern Conference, which is as successful as Kendall Bryles has been, not only at Baylor, but at Florida Atlantic and Houston. Florida State got better, but it wasn't the same level of success he had in other places. I think that's a question mark that some people have, not just like this gap, like this gasping question mark, this massive question mark, but it is a little bit of a question mark regardless of how much success you had. Can you do in the SEC, especially with a guy that you just had as your past head coach who had a high volume of success at Clemson in the ACC and then had some really good success on offense in the American Athletic. But we know that competing, especially from the AAC to the SEC, it's a whole different ballgame.
And ultimately, it's going to boil down to, can you recruit the players you need to be successful in the Southeastern Conference? Can you, as the coordinator, be convincing enough to get that level of player, enough four stars and a handful of five stars to come to your school so you can win ball games? Because that's all, it's the main ingredient. You know what I mean? You know, I was making meatballs yesterday. You know what the main ingredient was? Meat. That's the same thing when you're putting together a football team. The main ingredient is players. It's recruiting. And, you know, all the seasoning, the spices, the oregano, the Italian seasoning, the garlic powder, those are all nice and extra, but the main ingredient was the meat. Well, that's the same thing here. The main ingredient in a successful football program is the players. And if you're not able to go recruit those players at this level in this conference, it doesn't matter how smart an X and O guy or how good you can scheme or how great you can break down film. All that doesn't matter if you don't have the players.
It's a classic argument. What's more important, the X's or the O's or the Jimmys and the Joes? Now, coaches have found over the years that they can still compete and have high-caliber teams with lesser players, but you also still need to have – it's a combination. You got to have some really good players and some players that you have to coach up, and that's what Arkansas has had over the years. They've had some really good, talented players that have showed up on campus and are Division I college football players, but they've also had guys that they had to work a little bit, that were a little rigid on the edges or that weren't as coached up in high school or just weren't as simply talented in high school. Again, it has to be a unique combination, and at Arkansas – one of the key parts of being a head coach, an assistant coach, GA, or whatever, is the ability to develop. Because when it comes to the SEC, when it comes to the other states, the other schools you are competing with in this conference, the level of recruiting in Arkansas does not stack up to what you're having to go against. That being said, you better be a dandy when it comes to getting kids better when they get on campus, because otherwise you're going to be behind the eight ball freshman year, sophomore year, junior, and senior year with these kids. You got to expedite that process when it comes to getting them to SEC level competition.
You're going to have to take some risk on kids that one thing Morris was able to do is get more four stars and fewer three stars. Question is, if those evaluations were real, can he take some of this younger talent, particularly on defense, and turn them into SEC caliber players? You're hoping that all of the evaluations and all of the recruiting that was done under Chad Morris is going to pay off for this staff. I mean, there's a real possibility that's going to happen. So then you got to replenish those. So there's never going to be a day where Arkansas didn't have to take a risk on a guy that's a three-star that some other teams have passed on, and even maybe some two stars. You want to get to the point, though, where you're loading up on the four stars at Arkansas, and that's always going to be a challenge.
And I'm curious, with Kendall Bryles coming in, he's coached under his dad, Art. He's coached under Lane Kiffin. I think Dana Holgorsen was there at Houston when he was the OC there, and he's also coached under Willie Taggart. Some of those guys have a lot of head coaching experience, others not as much. So with him coming in under first-year head coach Sam Pittman at the Division I level, how does he react to that? Do they mesh together offensively? I know Sam Pittman likes to have bigger offensive linemen. Kendall likes to speed things up. How does that work? Because we saw that Sam Pittman's offensive line didn't mesh together with Dan Enos. Uh-huh. So how does that work? How does that shape out? And then with Barry Odom, how does he fare in year one? I know that they were just abysmal this past season. Can the defense, and we've talked about this a little bit, they don't have to be top four, they don't have to be top half, but you better be not as terrible as worst in the conference as you were last year. You got to be better in that category when it comes to scoring defense. We're not asking, Tommy and I are not asking Kendall Briles to have the number one offense and Barry Odom to have the number one defense in the Southeastern Conference. But if you want to see gradual improvement with this football team, then you can't be in the same position that Joe Craddock and John Chavis were this past season.
Yeah. Just don't suck. You know, that's what we're asking, right? Don't be last. Don't suck. And in a league that, hey, is there a better group of defensive coordinators in any college conference or any division than in the SEC West? That's always the challenge. That's why these offensive coordinators make the money they make. They got to go up against the best defensive coordinators in college football as a collection. So, I mean, there's just no, I mean, the old phrase, there's no weeks off, you know. So that's what makes the job difficult is, yeah, it's hard enough, you know, getting all the pieces in place to have a great offense, but then you got to go up against the best defensive guys in the country. Hard.
Best defensive players, really good defensive staff. You think about Kevin Steele over at Auburn, one of the best DCs in all of college football. And it seems like now you don't have to go against, luckily, you don't have to go against, I'm blanking on Baylor's head coach now, Dave Aranda, yeah. Formerly of LSU. He was one of the best along with Brent Venables and stuff. So there's guys that at least you don't have to go up against anymore. But it seems like similar to on the players front in the Southeastern Conference, the SEC reloads on the coaching front as well, because now you brought in Mike Leach, who's one of the more revered offensive coaches in all of college football, Lane Kiffin, who doesn't get enough respect with his offensive mind, how good of a master he is on that front. And then I don't know if I can say as much about Eli Drinkwitz, but it seems like the SEC, not only from a player's perspective, but not only the head coach, but the defensive coordinators, the offensive coordinators, they reload in those assistant coaching staffs as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key to it is how well can you recruit and develop that talent. And the staff and the stability of the staff is interesting. You bring up Leach there and Drinkwitz and some of these guys. We talk about the M schools. All those are offensive-minded head coaches. How well did they load up on defensive staff? How well did they load up on coordinators? And you can look at Sam, and you know, I know he's an offensive line guy. He'll help the offensive and defensive line through his experience. He'll make the line of scrimmage play better. But of all the schools in transition, the M schools, I don't think anyone did a better job than Sam Pittman of hiring a defensive coordinator.
And that's where Sam Pittman has been given a lot of credit by college football analysts who are initially skeptical and laughing, and they raised their eyebrows a little bit when it came to, oh, I don't know who this guy is. He's just an offensive line coach. What makes you think he could have success at Arkansas? Then they saw the recruiting in year one. Then they saw the hiring of Barry Odom, who's respected not only in SEC circles, but in college football circles, and then Kendall Briles as well. And that's the thing about the coordinator positions that you got. The SEC is the toughest conference in college football. It's the most respected. Now, people may hate it, but they still have respect for the SEC because they know the talent that comes out of this conference. So when you have guys that not only are respected in the SEC, but of all of college football, which Kendall Briles is and Barry Odom is. Now, Odom has had success within this conference. Kendall Briles has had success outside, but many people think that he can take his offense and do something with it at Arkansas. Hopefully that bodes well for you. Now, I know you say, well, Ty, Chad Morris was one of the more respected offensive minds when you look at when he initially came in. And that's a fair point, because I think a lot of people, whether it's his former players, whether it's college football people who he had on, they kept repeating and regurgitating the same thing. Chad Morris is going to have offensive success at Arkansas. Unfortunately, he didn't have any success at Arkansas outside of the recruiting class he brought in this past season. So what you're hoping is second time's the charm. The guys that you brought in, Barry Odom, Kendall Briles, that they actually live up to expectations. And you're not, again, the expectations are not just vastly unattainable expectations that these guys shouldn't be able to get in year one. No one's asking them to be the number one offensive and defensive teams in the Southeastern Conference, but there should be a level of expectation, a rise within those two position groups when it comes to 2020.
I mean, what do you really think about with an offensive coordinator, particularly considering the head coach's background and role? The offensive coordinator's number one job is to what? Develop a quarterback. Let's get out of this musical chairs business when it comes to the quarterback role. That's been the problem with the program for the last 2 years. What was it, 8 starting quarterbacks in a 2-season span?
I think that's right.
So you've got to get out of that. I mean, barring injury, you need stability. And that's the number one job for Kendall Briles, is stability at the quarterback spot. He doesn't have to worry as much about what happens up front. Now, you got concerned because you got to recruit players. But, I mean, as far as coaching, how the front line is going to be coached, you ain't got any worries there. The number one job for Kendall Briles is to get some stability at the quarterback role that Arkansas has desperately needed.
And he's had some good quarterbacks. We had Seth Russell on, former Baylor quarterback. He told us that how exciting that Baylor offense was when Kendall Briles was at the head of it. We've heard from other quarterbacks talk about the same thing. Bryce Petty had one of the best seasons in college football back in 2015 when Baylor had the number one scoring offense in the country. We saw what he did with De'Arik Keene at Houston. He had success at FAU. I mean, quarterback-wise, he has had success over and over, time and time again. Now you're hoping with a veteran guy who's competed in the SEC with Felipe Franks, and I think we're all assuming that he's going to be your starting quarterback, you're maybe not asking him to have the number one offense, scoring offense in the country. You just want an offense that can win you some ball games, because why Chad Morris's offense never worked at Arkansas, never helped you get over the hump against any SEC team when the defense just gave you enough and you just needed one last offensive possession to get it done, or one last scoring drive. It didn't happen with Chad Morris at Arkansas. Now you're asking the same thing of Kendall Briles. Hey, we need one of these possessions. We need one of these games where we can fill it up for 50. That's not too high of expectations. You hope he can live up to those with this season.
And you know, I agree with all of that, but you know, we went through some of the same conversation with Chad Morris, right? Success elsewhere, good players elsewhere, quarterbacks that went on to success, quarterbacks that had success at the college level come to Arkansas, didn't work out. So Kendall Briles, I don't want to be sitting here in 2 years having the same conversation that we were having today about Chad Morris, that all of those things you just said about Kendall Briles, you could have inserted different names and places and said the same thing about Chad Morris. So hopefully, what's it take to be different this time? You know, what is it that will make it different? Because everyone, you don't hire people that had poor performance before in previous stops. You've hired people that have successfully accomplished some things in their roles where they were at previous stops. So what has to be different, Ty, to make the outcome different?
Well, I think the right answer is offensive line and quarterback play, and maybe right. Quarterback play means more to you listening right now, you listeners, but quarterback play, one of the reasons it was so bad these last 2 years is because the offensive line didn't block anyone.
Correct.
Now you have a guy in Sam Pittman who's revered as one of the best, if not the best, in college football when it comes to running that unit. I know he's the head coach and Brad Davis the O-line coach, but it starts in the trenches. You have to build in this conference. You have to build from the outs or the inside out. Chad Morris tried to do it outside in with skill position players. What? You have to be an inside out recruiting base, because if you don't win the trenches, it doesn't matter how talented your skill players are, because your quarterback doesn't have time to throw the football, or it doesn't matter how talented your linebackers and secondary is, because if the opposing QB has all day to throw, their talent will be overlooked and just gunned over like that. It will just be quick and easy. Talented quarterbacks in the SEC will make easy of that if they're giving all day to throw. So it starts with the big uglies up front. And if you don't establish that in year one, That's not good. That's not a good sign. Now, will that probably happen? Probably not. I would suspect that Sam Pittman is going to do what he's done time and time again, which have a good offensive line. Now, this might not be one of the best offensive line in the country, but I think if you look at any position group from this past season, I think it's a fair point, and I think it's a fair case to say that position unit is going to make the biggest jump based on the track record of Sam Pittman and based on what the emphasis is going to be with this football team.
Oh, and I can't wait to see him get a crop or two of recruits in here. Give him a year or two to really find the guys and the body types they want. And I think this offensive line, I think correct answer, the difference has got to be the offensive line play. And I think it will be different with Kendall Briles. How much different year one, we'll find out. But that's the reason it never worked for Chad Morris or his offensive staff.
Turner for a wide open Eubanks. Touchdown!
Turner firing over the middle. Drop this time, going for the home run, and it's caught!
Sterner steps out of trouble, wow. Lost to a wide open receiver, it's Cobb, towards the end zone, touchdown!
Goes down the middle.
Touchdown, Arkansas, oh my!
This is Clint Sterner, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Hour number three of the Morning Rush coming at you. Going to the phone lines, welcoming in former Arkansas quarterback and current host of Clint Sterner and the show down in Houston on Sports Radio 610. Clint, good morning. Thanks for making some time for us, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been way too long. How you boys doing?
He left out the most important thing on your resume, former Morning Rush host. I mean, that's like
that's right.
Right up at the top, right, Clint?
That's right. That's right. Top of the resume, baby.
How you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Life is good. I can't complain. I mean, I know it's easy right now with what our country's going through, but I can't complain, man. Life is good.
Clint, we had your former teammate and one of your good friends, Anthony Lucas, on about a month or so ago, and we were asking him like the correlation between the movie Greater and how your guys' season actually went in 98 and the mindset of that football team of you guys like coming in, not wanting to give up on the season with the new head coach. And in a lot of cases where some new head coaches come in, they play a lot of younger players. And he said the whole mentality of that team was coming together. Clint, looking at this team with Sam Pittman in year number one, what is your biggest piece of advice on how this team needs to rebuild under year one of Sam Pittman?
Well, I mean, I've said this from the jump. You know, I think that this team is much more talented than what they've shown the country over the last couple of years. So first and foremost, I think the biggest part is just, one, it can be done. Turning the corner sooner rather than later, in fact, turning it overnight and in one season, it can be done. Don't waller in the struggles of the last two seasons. There's a lot more talent there than maybe the last two seasons have shown. I firmly believe that. And you just gotta put your blinders on and go back to work, man. And you gotta have a little luck along the way. I think that's the one thing in 98 when we turned the corner, we didn't know how good we were as a team, but we trusted in the system. We trusted in the coaching staff. And we went out there and one game, every win gave us more confidence. And you looked up and about four games in, you go, man, we're a pretty confident group. And then you get to thinking that you're actually talented and you're pretty dang good. And you belong in the SEC, and then from there on, anything can happen. So, I mean, look, there's a lot that goes into the formula to get these guys to turn the corner. But I think first and foremost, believing that you're talented enough to turn the corner, you're much more talented than what you've shown in the last two years. I think that's the key message out of the gate when they do get back together.
Clint, there's a lot of games this past season, a lot of drives this past season, really the past two seasons that you can be irritated by. But I think when you go back to last year, one of the most irritating statistics that you see is that Treylon Burks did not have a touchdown. And I know you're really high on the guy. What do you think he's going to be in Kendall Briles' offense in year number one?
Man, I sure hope he's big time. I hope Kendall figures out a way to get him touches consistently. And, if I know Kendall, I mean, look, I'm a Texas guy. I know his dad. I've watched him, you know, ever since he became a coach, and watched him at Baylor, watched him at U of H. You know, I know they didn't have a lot of success at Florida State, but that's a different monster out there. So I got to believe that if anybody can get can find a way to get certain receivers the ball, it's if his last name is Browse, you got a pretty dang good chance. So, you know, I think that Treylon Burks is a guy that I'm blown away with his ability in the return game, as well as really he's one of those guys that any time he touches the football, whether it's the jet sweep or it's some kind of, you know, Darren McFadden wild hog type of situation, or it's in the receiving game. I think it's in college football, that guy is the most valuable guy in the game, and you got to find ways to use him, not just in the pass game, but just throughout the four quarters in different ways in your offense. He's got to be the key cog, man. I know that's difficult when you got a Felipe Franks, you got a Keem Boyd, those kind of guys, but, man, Treylon's special.
I want to ask you about Franks. Have you spent much time watching him on film? How much have you seen Franks play?
Yeah, I've seen him play a lot, man. I on film, not in person. He was one of those. Him and Kellen Mond, the two guys, Tommy, early when they first got to Florida and A&M, respectively. I saw him throw one ball, and you're like, that's the guy. Unless he's just a mental midget and he can't understand a college football playbook, then that's your guy. Just physically, the way that they stroke the football allows them to make every single throw, from the real quick sidearm bubble to his right or left, you know, just a little quick little swing route to his right or left, or, you know, driving the comeback on the sideline, or the deep ball over the middle, whether it's the post or the go route. You know, he has the ability from it's all arm talent, really, to be completely honest with you, but just his stroke is, I call it a power stroke. It's one of those that, man, it's supreme control. All the greats have it. And when you watch him throw with those two guys, I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago when I first saw them, I said, Kellen Mond's going to start at A&M and have a decent little career, and Felipe Franks should be the guy in Florida. And it was all because of their physical mechanics and ability to toss the football around. So, man, I'm excited about that guy more than any of them, because I think Arkansas had some serviceable guys over the last few years, and Ty Story, Ben Hicks. But when you look at what they have now, Felipe Franks is a difference maker physically. I don't know what he is mentally, but physically, he's a difference maker.
All right, so break it down for us, because you look at it a little bit different. You coach quarterbacks, you study quarterbacks. What is it with his footwork, his arm mechanics? Give us some of that high-level stuff that you're able to talk about here.
Well, he's a full-body guy. You know, you get a lot of guys that have a big arm, but they move like Gumby. You know, they don't really transfer power from the ground up. So he's a little bit on the, I call it rigid, which that's a positive to me. A lot of coaches say that's a negative. For me, I want my guys to be a little bit rigid. I want them to be able, when they push and their push turns to a rotate, I want all that to be tied together. I don't want it to be Gumby. I don't want it to be a real twisty action. And then obviously the ball control is key, Tommy. I mean, you know, you got a lot of guys that can spin it around the park, but it's like the ball is on the end of a wet noodle, and they're generating a lot of arm speed, and the ball comes off their hand well. That's typically hard to control. When you talk about Felipe Franks, he has great ball control. If he needs to lift the ball right now, like say it's a screen or maybe it's one of those shallow crossers, and he needs to lift the ball right now, get his release point real high, and snap the football out, he has the ability to do that. If he needs to reach back and sidearm one, you know, pull the old Pat Mahomes, then he has the ability to do that as well. He has great ball control. And the last thing, Tommy, is he has a power snap. I think that's the one that's a big difference between baseball and football, and it's a huge difference between whether a kid has it or doesn't have it, and he has a power snap. It's Aaron Rodgers. You've all seen Aaron Rodgers throw the ball. He's the most powerful snapper of the football on the planet with two legs. I mean, it's amazing what he can do. And if you have that snap, maybe not the Aaron Rodgers snap, but if you snap the football out of your hand, you got a strong wrist, then you can pass the football at a high level.
Clint, it's Clay. When you played, it looked like you were in perfect rhythm with your wide receivers, and y'all could make eye contact and knew the route that y'all could change to, and it was an effortless flow to how y'all ripped up a defense. In the systems that I see now, it's all about the coordinator making the calls at the line of scrimmage and communicating that situation that y'all seem to do just in an innate way. And have they gotten enough time yet to be where they need to be to get to where, say, you and Luke were and your other receivers? What they've happened in the last 3 months, is that going to wreck their progress?
Well, I tell you, it definitely makes it more difficult. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But to me, what the reason that Anthony Lucas and I and Mike Williams and Emmanuel Smith and Boo Williams and Jodine Davenport and Al Herringer, the reason that we were, as you said, we just seemed to, I mean, we saw the game through the same lens, you know. I mean, we had thrown, literally, Clay, I would, and you know this, you were around, man. I mean, Joe Ferguson told us, look, guys, we're going to throw 4 days a week in the summer. If you're here and you're in summer school, we're throwing 4 days a week. And I'd say, okay, we're going to throw at 4 o'clock. When I showed up at 4 o'clock, Anthony Lucas and the entire receiving corps was there. I mean, they were already to the point where they were stretching and they were warming up where I mean, they had shirts off and ready to rock and roll. It wasn't walk up and everybody drinking on water and talking to some gal on the phone and playing some video game on the iPad in the corner. You know, there was none of that. I mean, and so the reason that we were able to be so good in the pass game, sure, the offense was good. Sure, there was a lot of talent at the receiver position. But ultimately, we saw the game through the same lens. We stayed on the field, whether it was practice or summer. If Anthony Lucas ran a corner or Anthony Lucas ran a comeback and I missed him, then we lined up and did it again. If coach didn't let us do it again, then we stayed at the practice and did it again. And I just don't know that exists as often. I don't know if that is as common now as it once was. These kids have so many distractions that I got to believe the biggest hurdle for this coaching staff is to get these guys to put the phones down, forget about the girls, forget about your problems at home, and get on the field consistently throughout the week and put the work in that's necessary. The ones that can do it, they'll separate themselves like never before. But it's not as common to do that. And that's all I know. That's why Anthony Lucas and I had so much success. It's because, I could dang near throw Anthony blindfolded. It wouldn't matter what route it was. We had done it so many times in practice and through the summer that it didn't matter. So, yeah, this time makes it hard, Clay, no doubt about it. It makes it hard for all of us to do our jobs. But ultimately, man, I mean, if those guys are putting that work in with Felipe and maybe three receivers, then we should see it on Saturdays, if and when that happens.
We're talking with Clint Sterner here on The Morning Rush. Clint, you mentioned your rapport with Anthony Lucas. Was it a particular game, a particular a practice? When did you know that you were going to have chemistry with this guy?
Well, every day at practice. I mean, there was no – I don't know if there was any one moment, but Ty, I knew early, man, because – Anthony and I, we beat to the same drum. I mean, we're never satisfied. Hard will never fail. We'll never fail you for hard work. I mean, that's not a problem. Effort's not a problem. And ultimately, Anthony understood that if I was asking him to stay after and throw with me or come in the summer and throw with me, because I didn't feel comfortable with something. And Anthony knew that if I didn't feel comfortable, it was going to affect his game. And us being on the same page was the most important thing. And I knew that from an early stage of our careers together, is I realized, obviously, Anthony's extremely talented. Don't let me forget to tell you that. I mean, obviously, he's unbelievably talented. But, man, I just – the hunger, the desire, the love to be on the practice field and the willingness to just – I mean, unbelievable work ethic made it very easy for a quarterback like me, man. I knew if I didn't make just a terrible, like I could afford to make a bad throw and he would make up for it. I just had to, I had to minimize my mental mistakes. Don't throw into double coverage, you know, don't miss 5 yards inside, you know, make sure you hit him in line or out over his outside shoulder. And he made me look good, man. But look in all of our, in radio right now, when you get a guy that just grinds through it and gets all the audio chopped up for you, man, and the rundown's right. And when mistakes are made, he cares. He wants to listen. He wants to learn, or he wants to coach. I mean, that was Anthony. You know, that he wasn't the guy that when we went to work or when we failed, just laughed and giggled and went to the sideline and you know, chit-chatted with his buddies or just went home after practice. He cared and stayed after and went to work. And that's when I get that right there, man, I don't care if it's radio business or football, I'm going to grind with him and we're going to have success.
Clint, I thought you brought up a good point talking about distractions, whether it's social media, video games, and on and on and on. These kids, different from when you were playing, have a lot more to deal with. That's not to say that that should be an excuse or anything, but the biggest distraction right now, Clint, is the coronavirus and everything going on. And I know when you think about college kids, good-looking young men that want to go out and have a good time with females or just be social or whatever, and now they're being told, hey, you can't do this. Clint, as a former college player that never had to go through this, but I want to get your perspective. How do you think players are adjusting to this, them being told, hey, you can't really be social in a time period of their life when, man, that's all they really want to do right now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that's the big question. It's clearly we're not doing it very well, because down here in Houston, it's blowing up. It's spiking again, I guess is the right way to put it. And I think a lot of that has to do with, man, when you open the bars and the clubs back up to 50% capacity or whatever it is you do, then I think we invite, it's not the kids, it's all of us. Human nature is, oh, okay, well, we're good, let's move on. And then the next thing you know, it spikes again. So I think it's a moving target for any of us to get it right. So I don't want to single out the kids. But when it's all said and done, man, it goes back to what I said from the jump. The guys that are disciplined enough to and care enough to go, dang it, I'm not good enough. I need to get better. I've got to stay and get more work. I got to get my grades right. The guys that care and it matters, and ultimately what they want to do is win and be successful in school or football or, heck, thumb wrestling for that matter. I think those guys, for the most part, as back in the 90s when I was there to today, those guys will mind their P's and Q's and be coachable for the most part. But as a whole, man, it's hard to keep them cats under wraps, man. I can't imagine what Coach Pittman's up against when you got 100 of them that you've got to try to corral, and now you've got coronavirus shaking everything up, man. So, you know, I don't want to single anybody out because I don't think any of us are doing a good enough job at this point in time.
So what is the feel? You're there in Houston. The numbers are on the rise there. They're same issues, particularly in Northwest Arkansas and in Arkansas, but across our state. As testing's increased, we've seen 500 to 700 cases, many days of positive tests. What's the feeling there in Houston, Clint? Are we going to play football? Is there going to be a delay? I can't imagine the state of Texas with no high school, college, or pro football, and how they would cope with that situation.
Yeah, Tommy, I mean, I got to believe that they're going to figure out a way to make it happen. I mean, one is we've got, you know, you got a month before they, I guess, late July, as training camp starts or cranks up, and then I would imagine they've already canceled the Hall of Fame game, the first preseason game in the NFL. I would imagine that they would adjust in some way, shape, or form with the other preseason games. Heck, man, you know, they've been trying to minimize those number of games in preseason anyway. This may be a great time for the NFL to make an adjustment and see if it works. But, you know, so I think they buy a couple of months there, and I think by that time we will be further along in understanding of, you know, how we cope with it, how we deal with it, how they treat it, you know, how they immunize, you know, is there immunization out there? I just think that we're so far out that right now the feel is here that absolutely they're going to find a way to play. Now, fans may not be in the stands, but they're going to find a way to make it safe enough to where two football teams at the NFL level of the right age group, males, can get out there and compete and make the money. There's so much money involved. Everybody I talk to says there's no way in hell they don't figure it out.
Clint, before we let you go, man, with Cam Newton, I know that you're going to spend the majority of your time on your show today talking about him signing with the New England Patriots. What are your thoughts on that, and do you think it's going to work out for him out there in Boston?
Man, it's interesting because I'm sticking to my guns. I think Cam Newton's done, man. I just don't. After watching that Week 2 performance versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, and really just the way that, you know, there was three or four throws in critical moments in that game where he just one-hopped the receivers. And I don't know if that's a result of his foot. I don't know if that was a result of his shoulder or the you know, he had done a lot of work on his mechanics, and But nonetheless, when I saw that game, I just thought, man, this is the end of one of the best quarterbacks, you know, athletic quarterbacks to ever play the game. So I'm going to stick to my guns that he's done. But it's an interesting topic, man. He's, you know, does New England adjust their offensive style? Do they go hire Gus Malzahn? I'm just joking. However, do they go to, you know, to that style of offense where they're running him downhill more, or do they really try to put the square peg in a round hole and get him to do Tom Brady type things? I don't think either one of those are very likely, and I love Jarrett Stidham, so I think Stidham ends up being the guy in New England, and Cam Newton's done. I'm sticking to my guns on that. Well, we're gonna slice that up six ways this Sunday today, though. There's no doubt about it.
Former Arkansas quarterback, host of Clint Sterner and the Show in Houston, and former host of the Morning Rush, Clint Sterner, joining us this morning. Clint, do me a favor, stay in Houston and don't come back and take my job, man.
Never, man. No chance. You host, boy. Y'all are a different breed now. Y'all be good, brother.
Appreciate it, Clint.
See you, Clint.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.